Hello, everybody, and welcome to American Pale Males, your nerdy beer tasting podcast. I'm your co-host, Mike, and with me is the other one.
Michael.
I kind of made it sound like I was going to launch into some other things, Michael, but I just decided to keep it simple.
Yeah, I was getting hyped there, and then I realized that you were leaving it at that.
The hype train was derailed.
Yes.
Michael, how have you been?
I've been doing great, Mike.
Excellent. Why don't you start us off with a nice beer brag?
That sounds good. I recently went to another brewery, local brewery, that is.
Okay.
Like the ones that are popping up all around here.
Mm-hmm.
This one was called Rockhound Brewing Company.
Hmm.
It's a little brew house, and the name Rockhound might evoke some images of like 50s diners. I don't know, like Jailhouse Rock and Hound Dog. I don't know. Those are
mixed together.
Yeah, that's what popped into my head. But right. It actually comes from the fact that this place was founded by a geology grad.
Oh interesting.
Nate Warnke, I believe his name is. Hopefully I'm saying that right.
Okay.
And basically, it's kind of that fairy tale, a homebrewer's dream come true. He's been brewing for 10 years and finally went in on his own business. I had a flight there, which included a hefe, a blonde, a pale ale, an IPA, and a porter.
Wow.
And for me, the winner was the hefe.
Okay.
But overall, it's a strong showing. All of them were real crisp, well-balanced. But on the other side of that coin, there wasn't a lot of bold flavor. But if you want like a really good, crisp, clean tasting example of any of those types of beers, they were well represented.
Okay.
I'm curious, with that though, I'm curious to try some of their more unique offerings as they come out. Maybe some more experimental ones.
Mm-hmm.
They also had some other Wisconsin area brews on tap as well there. So
okay.
Nice variety, a lot of choices there.
And was this just like a tap room or is it food available or what's going on here, Michael?
It is, like we say, an eatery as well.
Okay.
So I didn't have any food there this time though.
Okay.
Maybe down the line I'll try some of their stuff. It looks like they hired I was going to say master chef, but that doesn't seem like the right word. Just like
Gordon Ramsay?
A specialty chef
like
a chef who's good at pairing things with beer and catering to that type of clientele. So
nice.
I'll have to try it out. And the geology theme is subtle there. I read an article saying that he didn't want to be overburied on the geology theme and put all these minerals and boxes of various specimens all over the place.
Okay.
There's subtle nods to geology. Maybe you wouldn't notice it right away. And there is some out and out references to geology, like old maps on the wall and stuff like that. But really tasteful, really well done.
Nice.
And yeah, so really nice atmosphere there too.
Very cool. Very cool. That sounds like somewhere, maybe a future visit, future live broadcast or something like that.
Yeah, we could put that one on the docket.
Nice. Michael, my beer brag is a wonderful gift from my wonderful wife. My wife and I, she's an artist, and I'm, I guess, also an artist. I'm
sure.
In theater. And when we have shows or, you know, when she has like an exhibit or something, instead of actually buying each other flowers, we get like symbolic flowers for each other.
Oh, yeah.
So this time around was some delicious chocolate chip peanut butter chip cookies.
Oh.
You might remember these, Michael. They were at my 30th birthday party. They had the sea salt on top.
Oh, yeah.
Quite delicious.
Those are really good.
A few other goodies, and then a bottle of the Kaimei Blue, the... And you know what? I always call it Kaimei, and I don't actually know if that's how it's pronounced.
Chimay,
okay.
I believe.
So this is
I might be sounding like an idiot as well, but I believe it is Chimay.
Chimay, okay. I'll go with you on that, Michael. You sounded confident enough. the Chimay Blue, and it's the Grand Reserve Blue Label.
Ooh.
Really, 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 really good. I give it 4.25. Nice raisin, dark notes, nice Belgian flavor. And actually, my wife, who doesn't really get into beer that much, you know, tried a sip of it, and she really liked it. And so I've now feel like I have an in if I ever want to try and get her to try some more things, to maybe find some more Belgians, nice Belgians to try.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we both enjoyed it. Yeah, like I said, 4.25, really, really nice. It was really nice to kick back. I had it after the play closed this past weekend.
That's right.
It's kind of a celebration drink
nice.
A kiss-off or whatever you want to call it. But yeah, it was very nice and very relaxing and delicious.
Yeah, that is a good one. That is official Trappist, I believe.
It is, yes. Yep.
Very good.
That's the nice, you know, the champagne-style cork where you have to untwist the little metal cage and then pop the cork out, which is always fun. Although, anytime there's, like, pressure and corks involved, I always get a little nervous, like it's going to shoot out like some cartoon and ricochet off every wall and break, like, the most expensive vase. Pew. Yeah. So, but no, this one was safe. I had a good grip on it. Nice, satisfying pop. And nice, satisfying beer.
Very good. Yeah. I've had Chimay only one other time before.
Mm.
And it was really good. It's a nice...
That's it's a little heavier of a hitter. I think it was 9%.
Oof.
But it goes down smooth. It's very nice. I think... Jenny was asking me if I've had it before. And I'm pretty sure it's one of the back in... Oh, what was it? 2013, 2014, we went to England, and we went to this place called the House of the Trembling Madness, which is this super cool small pub in York.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure I had this. It was in a Chimay glass, but I don't remember if it was this specific kind of Chimay, but
gotcha.
I know it was Chimay because they had they have glasses for each specific brewery there. So
okay.
Yeah. But either way, if I hadn't had it before, it was a nice return to delicious beer. So, Michael, enough about my bragging. What's been your Week in Geek stuff?
Mike, I have an episodic Week in Geek for an episodic video game.
Mm.
And I'm talking about Hitman, which I mentioned in the show a few weeks back.
Yes.
I was only referring to the first episode, but since then, two episodes have come out. And they are really interesting levels. One level is just gorgeous. It's kind of a weird contradiction. It's this pretty violent backdrop to a game, but it's this beautiful Italian coastal villa.
Oh, okay.
Where a top secret lab is set up and this mad scientist is there.
Oh.
Yeah, you're trying to prevent him from releasing this virus on the world, basically.
Okay.
And the other one is set in Marrakesh, Morocco.
Oh.
And there is kind of a... Arab Spring-like situation going on where there's protesters in front of an embassy and there's some parties behind the scene trying to manipulate that situation that you are taking out.
Okay.
But it's a real sprawling level Marrakesh is. It has like a bazaar and all these storefronts and like a school where this rebel leader is kind of hanging out and a Swedish embassy. So it's really varied, large, expansive level that you can kind of sneak around and do a lot of things going on.
The Italian level, now, is that more closed off? Because if it's what I'm thinking of, is it kind of like Cinque Terre, where it's like the coastal town with the buildings kind of built into the hills and they're all like very colorful?
Yeah, it's kind of similar to that.
Okay.
The main area is this big manor, this big villa.
Okay.
But you can go outside and wander around the town a little bit. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you're right. It's kind of like embedded into a hillside.
Yeah.
But you can go to like an ice cream shop there. There's a church there.
Okay.
And you can put on all these disguises. You can dress up like a priest, like an ice cream man if you want.
Yeah, I've actually been to that area and it is like, it's all very isolated. There's like one main road and people don't really drive because there's not really far to drive.
Right, yeah.
So it's probably that one's probably maybe a little more claustrophobic, at least in the areas you could go.
Yeah.
Probably nice vistas, though.
Very nice vistas. Very blue Mediterranean backdrop to that. It's gorgeous. And I'm thinking the developers maybe thought, oh, yeah, we need to go to, like, the Mediterranean to design our level. Yeah,
right.
let's go there and get some inspiration.
Write it off. Yeah.
Write it off, yeah.
Just put it on the business card. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Both levels very fun. So many ways to play each of them. So many different disguises, places to hide out. The one playthrough, there's like this giant moose statue hanging on the ceiling in the Swedish embassy, and the target sits right under it. And so you like just shoot the wires where it's hanging from the ceiling and it drops on him.
Yeah.
Really zany stuff like that.
Okay.
Pretty morbid, I guess.
Yeah.
Not that I say that a lot, but you know, it's a video game.
Yeah.
Looking forward to more of these levels, though, Mike. It's
very nice.
Been a good one.
Yeah. Well, that's the real trick with episodic material like that. It has to keep you champing at the bit, I believe is the actual phrase, for more episodes. So nice. Michael, my Week in Geek stuff is, aside from the show closing, mine, I think, is pretty much going to be the exact opposite of what you were just talking about.
Mm-hmm.
My wife and I on Saturday went to the movie Love and Friendship. This is based on a Jane Austen novella.
Oh, is that? I might be way off base. Does that have Daenerys in it?
No, that's some other thing.
Okay.
Like Before You or something.
Oh, okay.
I don't remember.
Tell me about this movie, because obviously I know nothing about it.
So this was starring Kate Beckinsale and Chloe Sevigny. It's, like I said, based on a Jane Austen novella. Kate Beckinsale is playing this kind of saucy. I don't know if saucy is the right word. But she's kind of this woman, this recently widowed woman who's kind of built a reputation for herself of being kind of a flirt. And I've seen, you know, my wife is a big Jane Austen fan, both the books and, the adaptations. And actually, we also just saw Pride and Prejudice and Zombies recently, which got middling reviews, but I actually thought was pretty enjoyable. So if you want to look that one up, that's fun too. But this one was very, I don't know what it was about it. It was very, witty and everything, like you kind of expect a British period film to be in this kind of style. But there was a little bit more style to it as well. Every time new characters were introduced to the movie, they would show them in like a little vignette and put their name underneath and then like their description. That was the most stylish part, but the rest of it just really was really snappy and funny. And yeah, if you have it at a theater near you, I would recommend going to see it. I really enjoyed it. 99% on Rotten Tomatoes, so
wow,
it's good to go. I don't think I've ever laughed so much at like a Jane Austen adaptation. So it was, yeah, it was very, very funny.
Cool.
There's a particular character who's kind of an airhead, I guess, named Sir James Martin, and he is definitely one of the highlights of the movie. There's a point when he's first introduced where he just kind of goes on this rambling monologue because he doesn't really know when to shut up. It's quite good. So yeah, I'd even if you're not really into maybe so much the period dramas or period romantic comedies or whatever you want to call them, I would highly recommend this. There's a little something for everybody.
Very good.
Yeah, and it's something, a kind of thing we haven't really highlighted on in Week in Geek, but wanted to give Jane Austen period pieces their due.
There's definitely, Jane Austen is geekable, if you will.
Oh, absolutely.
She has a very good following, I think,
mm-hmm.
And for good reason.
And for good reason.
Mike, since we're recording in a timely manner, I wanted to ask you, have you seen any of the E3 coverage?
Oh, yeah. I saw that the Xbox thing was today.
Yep.
I saw that they're coming out with a newer version of Xbox One, but the games will all still be compatible on the older system.
Yeah.
And then a slim version of the Xbox One. I haven't seen, I think Sony's maybe was tonight, but I haven't seen anything from that yet.
Yeah, I think that's going on right now. All I saw on the Twitter was that Crash Bandicoot is back.
Oh, I did see that in my Facebook feed from Polygon.
So lots of hype about that, I guess.
I'm going to probably, after we get done recording, take a look at all that stuff, because I really want to hear more about the PSVR thing.
Oh, yeah.
And also, just to see what their new system supposedly is going to be.
Right, yeah. I haven't seen anything about that.
Yeah, so
interesting.
Oh, I see here, Michael. Breaking news. PlayStation VR launches October 13th.
Okay.
So that is not far away.
No, not at all.
I'm really looking forward to when these things are, playable at like a Best Buy or something like that, so I can actually experience it for myself.
Yeah.
Rather than just read about it all the time.
Yeah. I've used an Oculus Rift once.
Oh, really?
And I was watching video on it. So it was interesting, but it was an early kind of model. So there was, the resolution wasn't very good. I hear they're much more improved now.
Yeah, I hear the screen door effect, as they call it,
yes.
Where you can kind of see the individual pixels has been upgraded. But
yeah.
Now, when did you have the opportunity to do that?
I actually took part of a study.
Oh.
And the only reason why I did it was so I could try it. This was maybe like going back 2 years now. And unfortunately, the study was to try to induce nausea with it.
Oh.
And it worked.
Oh, okay.
So I walked away from the experience not feeling so good. But I think so I was watching a video, so I wasn't really in control of any of the motion. But I think if I had a controller controlling the motion, controlling where I was looking, it would have been a much more pleasant experience.
Was the video like static in front of you? Like no matter where you looked, it was always ahead of you? Or was it?
No, I could look around at least.
Oh, okay.
But it was basically drone footage flying around. And you know, I had no control of where the motion, the overall path was. So.
Gotcha. Yeah, I've heard that part is kind of, if something takes over, like let's say you're doing a first-person shooter and then a cutscene kind of takes over, so it moves for you, that part can be really strange, I guess.
Yeah.
But I can see that. Yeah, I'm super excited about all things VR. I just really would like to try it sometime, so.
Definitely, yeah. I was really excited for Bethesda's press conference because I was hoping for stuff to come out on Elder Scrolls 6, but...
But you got Describe-Rim remastered.
Yeah, well, already playing it on PC, it's like
those
texture packs and all that stuff has already kind of been out for the PC gamer.
Sure.
Now it just finally works on like PlayStation.
Right, right.
It didn't before. But yeah, I guess looking at the leaks and stuff, it was very unlikely they were going to say anything about it anyway. I guess they just are working on it this year, but lots of other cool games coming out from them too. So
yeah.
Because beggars can't be choosers. Anyway, that's E3.
Yeah, E3 can geek.
E3 can geek. Yeah, there you go. I like that.
Maybe we'll have more to discuss next week when we, you know, are able to check out some of the Sony stuff and, I guess, watch someone else play the new Zelda game.
That's about the best you can get.
Pretty lame, Nintendo. Pretty lame.
Right.
Michael, we've approached the mail door.
Oh, yeah. There it is.
There it is. Would you mind opening it up and finding out what lies behind it?
I most certainly will, Mike. Push the button here. All right. There is some content here. I'm going to rummage through the bag and pull out this envelope.
Okay.
Oh, it's from Jeremy.
Ah, friend of the show, Jeremy.
And he has a few things from prior episodes, so let's go back and revisit some of those things.
Okay.
First bullet point, I guess. How has Mike not seen the Hitchcock classic, The 39 Steps, while being in the play? Sounds like a foolish move to this critic.
Well, there's two things I would respond to that. First of all, I'm not sure where he got the qualifications to call himself a critic. Second of all, he's clearly not in the actor process. I deliberately did not watch the movie so as to not bias my performance towards some like imitating the movie or accidentally using some things from the movie in my performance. So sorry, Jeremy, but you're wrong on this one.
That's what I was going to ask you. I was going to say, it seems like if you, that would kind of get into your head and influence how you approach the role. So,
well, even I remember from listening to the commentaries for the first season of The Office, Steve Carell mentions that he deliberately didn't watch the British Office because he didn't want to do an impression or anything like that.
Yeah, I could see it could come off really uncanny if you did that.
So if it's good enough for Steve Carell, it's good enough for me.
There you go.
So that's we've taken care of the first bullet point. Let's go on to the next one.
It's not a foolish move.
Criticizes me again.
All right. Also, old man Mike forgot to mention the arguable gem of the Marvel Universe in Guardians of the Galaxy. And actually, pause, sidebar, I did see Guardians of the Galaxy, so add that to my repertoire.
Well, see, and I didn't include it because it wasn't, at this time, it's not really part of the Avengers universe, which is more what we were talking
about. That's true, yeah.
So I didn't think it was relevant yet. Time will tell. I think, man, when the Infinity War movies start coming out, they'll start kind of crossing over. But right now, I left them out. But it is a good movie. I will agree with Jeremy on that point.
They said, outside of the wonderful psych out in the Lethal Weapon-esque Iron Man 3, it's the only Marvel movie with a well-defined villain, in my opinion.
There I would disagree with him, but that's fine.
Who would you take as a well-defined villain?
There hasn't really been very good ones so far in the cinematic universe. Loki has been fun, but I think to get a really good villains in for Marvel, you have to go to their Netflix output. Vincent D'Onofrio's Wilson Fisk is excellent, and good old 10th Doctor David Tennant as Purple Man in Jessica Jones is also very, very good. Okay. Those are, I think the main difference is you have the opportunity to build up these characters rather than just get through their entire motivation in a short movie, especially when the movie's mostly focused on the heroes.
Yeah.
I liked Red Skull as well in the first Captain America. I enjoyed that one. Michael, did you make any more plans to watch any more of the MCU?
Well, I think I'm going to, once that Netflix thing goes through, I think I'll watch the Iron Man.
Oh, okay.
Stuff.
Sure.
And to be fair to Jeremy, he did say Marvel movie.
Yeah, that's true.
So to stave off another email, I will.
Good call. Yeah. The best offense is a good defense.
Yeah, I did think about going into watching the blind bat. What's his name? Daredevil.
Oh, the blind bat.
And Jessica Jones. But
yeah.
Especially after your Weekend Geek, I think you brought it up before.
Yeah, yeah.
I just kind of forgot about it, I guess, really. Mm-hmm. So maybe I'll have to check those out.
Yeah, highly recommended. First season of Daredevil is better than the second, but I still enjoyed the second as well. So,
all right, final bullet point from Jeremy. And they're not really bullet points. I'm just making them bullet points. Back to beer news. Solon, which is in Iowa, mm-hmm. Solon's Big Grove is opening a production brewery in the homeland of Iowa City! Exclamation point. The old university surplus store is in the process of being procured by arguably the best brewer in the corridor. I do believe the two of you should get down here and take in the splendor of Big Grove.
I've never had any of theirs. Have you, Michael?
I have had a few. I couldn't name them off the top of my head. I know when I was at that beer barn in Iowa.
Oh, yeah.
One of theirs. And I think I liked it. And I did have... Oh, did they do that blonde fatale?
That's Peace Tree.
That's Peace Tree. Oh,
yep.
Grove Tree. All this nature stuff. So, yeah, I had one of theirs. I just can't remember exactly which one it was. But I did like it. I remember that, at least.
And I didn't know Solon had a brewery, which that's amazing. Solon is kind of a tiny town.
Very tiny.
For them to have a brewery, and let alone one that's, you know, recognized for being good and is now expanding, that's very impressive. It's kind of like Kelowna is also a tiny town, but they're also doing really good things with beer there, too.
Yeah.
I guess it's just wherever you have the passion.
Yeah.
Wherever you are, just make it happen.
Yeah. Well, good job, Iowa.
Yeah.
We might have to take Jeremy up on that offer. We'll
see. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
What the summer brings.
Michael, there's another piece in the mailbag here, kind of, but it's more of just a Twitter conversation that Jeremy had with the APM Pod Twitter handle.
Yeah. I don't quite know why APM Pod was looped in. Maybe it was so you would see it, Mike. I think.
Yeah, I don't know if he and I are actually following each other on Twitter. Maybe I should figure that out. My regular Twitter handle, but
yeah.
Either way, it kind of brought up something for me that I can't believe we haven't really discussed on the show before.
Oh yeah.
So for listeners that aren't aware, Michael and I went to high school together, and we used to make movies in high school. And here's a weird thing. I used to play Michael in these movies.
That's true, yeah.
I mean, I played Michael in quotes, I guess. I don't remember entirely how this got started, Michael. I know the idea was just basically like, what if you didn't get a 4.0? What would you do? Like, how would you flip out?
Yeah.
And in the case of these movies, you join a gang.
Right.
So, but anyway, so Jeremy was apparently watching these thanks to a friend of the show, Steve, who has one of the DVDs. And just posted them watching the video, like a short clip of it, onto Twitter. Mm-hmm. And then in the background, they can hear like, who is that? So,
yeah,
it's weird. It's really weird to hear people that I like have never seen these things watch this dumb thing that we made over the course of like 4 years.
Right. Yeah. One thing that I always take pride in with those was that was before smartphones. It was all shot on a 8mm camcorder.
Right.
All the footage was fed manually converted from analog to digital.
Right. Aside from 4.0, that was a digital camera.
Yeah, but the fourth entry in the series actually had a digital camera. That's true.
But that was still pre-smartphone. I mean,
yeah.
Imagine what we could have done now, Michael, with, you know, I mean, these smartphones have better cameras than we ever used.
Right. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. And YouTube and all the editing tools that are available.
So much easier.
It's much easier now, yeah.
But yeah, if you we always talked about putting them on YouTube. I think at the time when I was thinking about doing it, they still had like a limit on the length of the video you could upload.
Oh,
so
yeah.
this was a long time ago that I was thinking about it, but it'd be kind of interesting to put those out there.
We might
again.
Get hit with like copyright notices too.
Right, that's true.
Because we use just put songs in there unlicensed.
Right,
we'll see.
But yeah, I think the crown jewel of all of that was the DVD that you and I kind of made with the help of friend of the show Tom.
Yeah.
10
copies in existence.
10 copies. It has animated menus. There's commentary for each movie. It has a real slip cover for the case. It's maybe I'll take a picture of that and put it on Twitter or Facebook or something.
Yeah.
Give people an idea of what it looked like. But yeah, that was definitely something. But it's funny just to think now that, you know, I played you in a movie and now we're doing this podcast together.
Yeah.
And it's never come up before.
Yeah, it's so bizarre.
So anyway, thanks for bringing those old memories up, Jeremy, and thanks for your other piece of mail, despite all of your biting criticism of me.
Yeah, maybe Jeremy's starting to take this heel persona. Maybe he's watching too much wrestling.
Oh, man. All right, Michael, let's let the mail door shut.
Got it.
And I think it's time for you know what it is.
The FDR.
Michael, what do those letters stand for?
F stands for find a beer. D stands for drink a beer. And R stands for rate a beer. FDR, find, drink, rate.
The New Deal.
The New Deal. That's right.
Michael, today
we're
having a brewery that I feel like was and still is very prestigious. But for a while there, it was like one of the main craft beer games in town.
Yes, I would agree with that statement.
Today, we're finally checking off the list. Dogfish Head Brewery, specifically the 60-minute IPA.
That was a ticking clock for
that
60
was
minutes.
60 minutes, and then Hugh Downs exploded.
yeah, there you go.
So, Dogfish Head Brewery. This is founded by Sam Caligione. He graduated from Muhlenberg College in Allentown, Pennsylvania, and started waiting tables at a Manhattan bar and kind of got his first taste of the beer business. He went home, bought a homebrewing kit, and he added overly ripe cherries to this mix he was making. He declared that it was delicious, and he decided that this is what he wanted to do with his life.
Awesome.
In June of 1995, so this is definitely been around for a while, in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, he founded Dogfish Head Brewings and Eats, which also coincidentally was the first brew pub in Delaware.
Eats.
The first eatery, as we say. The name Dogfish Head actually is just a place. It comes from Dogfish Head, Maine, where he was. He often went as a child. They went on vacations there. They originally brewed in 12-gallon batches with a very, very small brewing system. I believe the description they gave was like basically 3 kegs on like burners or something like that.
Oh, my gosh.
Because it was small, though, they got to do a lot of experimentation in those early days, because even if the batch was bad, it was just, you know, dumping out 10 gallons of beer and moving on to the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of adventurous spirit really kind of stuck with them through the years. Like a lot of the other stories that we've had on FDR, demand grew more. They built a new brewery and they expanded the brew pub. And then in 1996, they began bottling the first beer they ever brewed, which was the Shelter Pale Ale. In 1997, they actually expanded again. And then by 1999, they're offering up to 5-year-round brews in about 12 states. In 2002, they moved into a 100,000-square-foot converted cannery in Milton, Delaware. And at this point, the latest number I saw was that they brew 250,000 barrels annually.
Jeez.
They also, the original brew pub location, they opened a micro distillery. I believe it said that those liquors are only distributed in Delaware and a few surrounding states. Very small distribution on the micro distillery. Okay. Caligione was actually featured in a short series, a TV series on Discovery called Brewmasters. And he kind of was going around looking for inspiration for beer. This is where I was first exposed to Dogfish Head. I remember seeing this just randomly on the Discovery Channel and thinking, oh, this sounds really cool. And then never being able to find the beer.
Oh.
At that time, anyway.
Right.
He was also in a documentary called Beer Wars, which I can't remember if I've mentioned before on the show, but it's the documentary is kind of about the rise of craft brewing and back then it was kind of more about the battle against the macro brewers of the U.S. Now at this point, that battle is tipping more on the side of craft brewing. One of the things I read, you know, it used to be that all you'd ever see on the shelves were Miller, Coors, Bud. Now, because, you know, the craft beers are a little more expensive, there's more profit for the sellers, for the, you know, the grocery stores and the liquor stores. So they have no problem replacing the cheaper beer with this craft beer. So that's kind of interesting to read. But anyway, off of that tangent, he was in this documentary called Beer Wars, kind of featured Dogfish Head, another kind of upstart brewery. They talk a lot with Jim Koch from Sam Adams, just about craft breweries trying to make it at the time in a really macro focused world.
Hmm.
I think it's still on Netflix. It's still worth watching. There's some good information on there. It was definitely one of those more of those like outrage inducing type thing documentaries where it's like, this is how the big breweries are screwing the little guy out of shelf space and all this stuff. But I think since then, I feel like things have gotten better. Although you and I have talked about all these, you know, these buyouts by the big breweries. So
taking over distributors and stuff like that.
So, but we'll see. But anyway, I feel like the show especially, and maybe the movie too, but I feel like that really raised the profile and the demand of Dogfish Head. And I remember... I was looking for it in our, you know, the big local liquor store in Illinois, and I saw they had empty six packs used for mix and match. I was like, "Oh, do you have any Dogfish Head?" And they're, "No." Like, I think at that point they were too popular, but hadn't really ramped up their production as much yet. So it was harder to find. They actually now distribute to 31 states. The specific beer we're having to 23 states. Iowa, Wisconsin are not on the list, Michael. So I don't know if Iowa and Wisconsin get their other brews, but this specific one I noticed was not on the list. So they have 5 year-round beers, including this one. There's a 90-minute IPA, a white ale, a brown ale, and Midas Touch, which is going back to that adventurous experimental brewing. It's a recipe based on the residue found inside clay pots that may possibly date back to 8th century BC.
Ooh.
And this is Midas Touch isn't the only beer they've kind of done like that, which is really interesting. You know, they're finding these residues, and then I believe a professor from a college is, you know, trying to break down what exactly the residue has in it and kind of recreate recipes from this ancient residue.
That's
which is
cool.
Really cool, yeah. So it's focusing more on the 60-minute IPA. 60-minute IPA is continuously hopped. More than 60 hop additions over a 60-minute boil. And then in parentheses it says, getting a vibe of where the name came from? 60-minute is brewed with a slew of great Northwest hops. A powerful but balanced East Coast IPA with a lot of citrusy hop character. It's the session beer for hardcore enthusiasts. I assumed that this came first, but actually the 90-minute IPA came first.
Okay. Interesting.
So, and they call this session beer, but it's 6%.
Yeah.
So I don't know how much of a session that is. Tasting notes, they say really hoppy, citrusy, grassy. Food pairing recommendations, spicy foods, pesto, grilled salmon, soy-based dishes, pizza, vintage cheddar. The glassware recommendation is an IPA glass. And the wine comparable is Busty Chardonnay. 6% ABV, as I said, and 60 IBUs. And they say IPA glass. I don't know if I've ever taken a picture for the Facebook feed or for the Twitter feed, but I actually have one of the IPA glasses. It was given to me as a gift by a friend of the show, Aaron. It's got this kind of like rippled handle at the bottom, and then the rest of it kind of curves out and then comes back in. It's very thin. It keeps the beer temperatures steadier than a thicker glass. And it was actually co-designed by Dogfish Head and trying to remember the name of the actual glass maker. I think it's like Spiegelglau or something like that.
Ooh.
It's specifically made. It's got one of those, you know, laser etchings in the bottom to release more of the aromatics in the head.
Yes, those are cool.
The ripples in the bottom are supposed to kind of reinvigorate the bubbles as well, I believe, so you get more of those aromas. We've actually done a side-by-side with this and then just a regular pint glass, and you can really tell the difference. You get a lot more of the aroma, you know, you get more of the flavor as well. So if you have the means or just are interested, they have, you go on, look for, I don't know if it's just specifically IPA glass, but if you look up maybe Dogfish Head IPA glass, I recommend that. They also do one with Rogue for stouts, which is Very similar, but with a smoother handle on the bottom. Hmm. Enough of my jaw, Michael. Let's get this puppy open.
Yeah.
It has a fish on the front. Did that do anything for you?
It's a custom bottle. It has like the embossed logo there of that fish.
Yep.
The Continually Hop India Pale Ale. Bottle cap here, also branded. But yep. Yeah, let's get this cracking open.
All right.
Oh, Ray Cerveza is having trouble.
Oh.
Oh. Oh.
Did 60 minute IPA kicked out the first time?
Yeah.
Then it went down for the count. I'm pouring it into the glass now. Nice, maybe it's because the way I poured it, but a nice thick head on here. Lots of bubbles.
Yeah, mine's really building up now. Yeah.
Nice golden color. Yeah, the bubbles are really coming fast and furious in this glass. Oh, I'm liking that smell, Michael. Did you put your nose in there yet?
Oh, yeah. That's very robust.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if I've ever had just the 60-minute before. I've definitely had the 120-minute, which is a really weird beer.
Yeah.
I think that's like 20% ABV or something like that.
Yeah.
And then I've had the 90, I'm pretty sure.
I've had the 90 before, too.
Mm-hmm.
I have not had the 120, but I know somebody who's recently procured the 120, and we might be able to put that on the show at some point. I don't want to put pressure on this individual to have to share his beer, but because it was very expensive, as I recall.
Yeah, it's not cheap. Anytime the ABV goes up like that, too, it's usually going to be a little more Boca Dolores.
Yeah, so I'm really interested in trying this one compared to the 90, and if I can complete that set, that'd be cool. But
gotta drink them all, Michael.
Yeah.
All right, I'm gonna go in there.
Yeah, you brought it, so you drink it first. Doesn't have to rhyme, Alice.
That's nice, Michael. The citrusiness is very, very prevalent. It's kind of sweet, actually, and it's not tongue-destroyingly bitter either. I think this is one that you might enjoy.
It's very different. Yeah. I agree with all those things you just said. It's very interesting.
It feels actually almost kind of mild.
It does, a little bit.
You get the bitterness maybe the second drink towards the end, but for the most part, it's very, very drinkable. Nice. Yeah, a little bit of sweetness to it.
It's almost like there's just like a touch of a sour in there.
Hmm.
With that sweetness, kind of that citric sweetness that... up front, not like it's anything close to being a pure sour, but it's just like a familiarity there.
Sure. Yeah, mostly from that citrus.
Yes.
I would say the
this
is nice. So Michael, what is this doing for you as far as, you know, since it's a IPA, a hoppy beer?
It is bitter, like you said, at the end, but it doesn't linger at all.
No.
There's no teeth gnashing bitterness at the end.
Right.
There's no smacking your tongue on the top of your mouth, trying to clear that lingering bitterness. None of that. It's kind of refreshing in that regard, actually.
Mm-hmm. You know, I brought it up on Untappd to get the ratings ready, but I noticed that, and I thought this was the case, but it says it's that in the description that's their flagship, and I would agree with that. I think they're most known, aside from the, you know, the crazy recipe beers. I think they're most known for these 60 and 90 minute IPAs.
Yeah. Mike, I'm sorry. Do we know what hops are in here? Did you say that?
It just said a lot of them.
Okay.
This particular description says Warrior, Amarillo, and Mystery Hop X.
Ew.
Sounds like the beginning of the Powerpuff Girls.
Yeah.
Chemical X. Yeah, this is nice. I don't know what more to say about it. It is a nice, citrusy, very drinkable beer.
Mm-hmm. I can see where the session description comes in that regard, too.
Yeah, it's very quaffable.
Yeah. Yeah, a nice showcase of the hops that are in there. That's why I was kind of curious about what was in there, because it's very boldly flavored, but it's not overly hopped, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a nice, it's balanced in that regard, even though the taste is so extreme.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like it's so extreme that it's ruining the beer. It's a nice balanced extreme.
And it's not... I feel like sometimes when you're doing, you know, when you have a decent amount of hops in the beer, there's usually a really thick malt backbone, but this one is more light.
That's a good point. Yeah. Now that you say that, there was really nothing notable about the maltiness.
Mm-hmm.
Let me go in thinking about that, though. Now
that you say that. Sure.
Yeah, the hops are front and center on this one, I'm pretty sure. The malt profile is agreeable, but it's not taking center stage at all here.
It's kind of like, Michael, when one person brings the beer and then they sit back while the other person does all the social media. The malt's just kicking back and letting the hops, you know, talk about Twitter and Untappd.
Yeah, which is a preview coming up.
That's right. Sorry, I didn't mean to spoil the end of the show.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I guess speaking of the end of the show, Michael, I guess it's time we rate this.
We better.
All right, I'm going in for the SOJ here.
That's right.
I drank it, so I rank it. Here we go. It's just really nice. It's got a nice depth of flavor, but it's not, like, inaccessible. And it's going down nice on a hot night like tonight. I'm kind of vacillating between two. I'm going to go ahead and give it I'm feeling good, 4.
Oh, okay.
It's between a 3.75 and a 4. I'm enjoying how you know, very quaffable it is. And, maybe it's because we're recording later at night, I'm more susceptible to giving nicer ratings. I'm not sure.
Okay, I guess it's my turn.
Mm-hmm. Go for it.
All right, I'll give it the sip of judgment here.
I'll give it the sip of post-judgment.
Yeah, I'll admit, Mike, I went for my phone.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to look at my rating for the 90-minute.
Oh, okay.
That's kind of cheating, but apparently I didn't rate that beer because I don't have anything in there on that.
So a real Adam, friend of the show Adam special, where you just log the beer but don't rate it.
Yeah. I didn't even log it, so I don't know what's going on.
Okay.
Because I remember drinking it, and I remember really liking it.
Maybe it was pre-Untappd?
No, it wasn't that long ago either, I don't know what's going on.
Huh.
Oops.
Oops all berries.
Yeah. So, but I know I rated it mentally more than a 4.
Okay, wow.
I really liked it. The thing I liked about it was because it had a higher ABV, and that kind of took the edge off of some of that bitterness.
Oh, okay.
And it really had a nice harmony to it. This one is more focused on the hops.
Mm-hmm.
They really take center stage, but they're very good. I'm going to give this brew a 3.75.
Very nice.
It's very enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
Really not much to complain about. I've been favoring beers that have a unique flavor more recently, and this one definitely has a more unique flavor. I think if I was in more of a traditional mood, I might rate it lower, but no, denied. What is it? Technicality.
No down, boo over.
Yeah. To reference Comedy Bang Bang, 3.75 and a cheers, cling, to your 4 as well, because I can completely understand that too.
Have you have you had any of the Dogfish Head outside of the IPAs, Michael?
I don't think so. I was going to say I have, but I think I'm crossing my wires with Flying Dog.
Oh, okay. I've definitely had the Midas Touch. It's very tasty.
Oh, the ancient.
The ancient recipe. And then I've also had, like I said, the other IPAs. And then I've had their Namaste, which is their white, and that's pretty good, too.
Well, you have a good source there. You're right on the Mississippi, so you can just cross that
right.
Like old Huck Finn and grab some of those beers that apparently can't get in Iowa and Wisconsin.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what it is. Like, why stop at Illinois?
Yeah.
Just take that little trip across the river.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. I do feel lucky to be in this part of the country where, you know, something I kind of take for granted, something like New Glarus, which, you know, people that aren't from the area go crazy for because they can't get it unless they're in Wisconsin. I just have to take a short trip across the Mississippi, and I take a little sip.
Yeah, and then you have access to all the Illinois breweries right nearby in the tri-state area.
That's right. That's me.
Yeah, that is awesome.
Yeah. All right, Michael, I'm going to kick back, maybe take 60 minutes with the rest of this, and let you shout out our social media. I brought the beer. I'm in the clear, baby.
That's right. You're the malt, and I'll be the hops here, Mike. pretty much as APM Pod in all your favorite social media sites. That would include facebook.com/APM Pod and twitter.com/APM Pod. There you'll find post updates on what Mike and I are up to and posts that relate to the episode. We put little vignettes. I don't know if that's a word, but little snippets for each episode. Maybe you'll see Ray Cerveza. Maybe you'll see FDR himself. Who knows?
Maybe you'll see U.S. Beer.
U.S. Beer. Still missing in action.
Oh, no.
It's like every time you say it, I'm like, oh, I got to find that. And then after I edit the show, I completely forget about it. So also on Tap, the aforementioned On Tap, where I was searching for my rating, you can find our ratings there for both Mike and I. APM Pod on there as well. And iTunes. That's the biggest one. Your favorite podcasting app, whether it be iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher. Check us out. Subscribe if you haven't already. And give us a rating. 5 stars, maybe, please. We'd appreciate it. Or you can always just email us, apmpod@gmail.com. Just like our old friend Jeremy. You can be a heel as well if you want. We'll read it out on air.
You can criticize everything I do as well. Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's about it for social media links. So, Mike, take us home.
All right. Well, this is another good one down the gullet, Michael. Thanks for accommodating my schedule again.
No worries, Mike.
So with that, the one-time actor playing Michael, I'm Mike.
And the one-time director directing Mike, I'm Michael.
And you've been listening to American Pale Males. Cheers.
Cheers.